We're back with Jonathan Franklin, author of the book 438 Days, telling us the story of fisherman Jose Salvador Alvarenga, a real-life castaway who was stuck on a small boat. So it was about this time that his boat gets pulled into a gigantic, gentle whirlpool, a circular current, teeming with life, so suddenly there's plenty to eat. But more than that, it was Alvarenga's sense of humor that got him through his most desperate moments.
He would spend hours talking to the ocean, and he would say, "Poor ocean, you must be tired. You've been carrying me for thousands of miles. Why don't you just throw me on a beach or something like that, you know? Get rid of me." And to the birds, he would lecture the birds. The birds would land on his styrofoam, and he would say, "Birds, man, if I were you, I would not go so far from shore." And I later interviewed survival psychologists who work closely with the British Navy. And they said that when they interview survivors of a lifeboat, you know, there's 10 people in the lifeboat and only 4 live, one of the key factors is their sense of humor. And those who are able to keep a sense of humor often stay alive. And he actually said that a deficit in a sense of humor can be fatal. If you don't laugh, you might die.
And so what would you do if you were, let's say you were lost at sea tomorrow? What would you most keep in mind from everything you've learned in the hope of surviving yourself?
First of all, I would say that the mental health is way more important than the physical health. So I would keep myself busy doing a million different things. You know, if I had a piece of rope, I would learn to tie 1,000 different kinds of knots. If I was staring at the sky, I would memorize 1,000 constellations.
But Jonathan said actually there was one thing that Alvarenga did dwell on, and that was key to his survival.
He'd been a terrible father. He had totally blown off his daughter, who's now 12, and he had always promised himself he would go back and be a good dad. And he said over and over again, you know, "I have to come back. I want to give her her quinceañera." And so he couldn't bear the thought of dying without resolving his promise to himself and to his daughter to come back and be a more present dad.
But that strong resolve, it didn't mean there weren't moments he considered giving up. One day, another ship passed right by his boat.
And it was so close that he thought it was going to get rammed. And at this point, his clothes are pretty ragged, his beard is very ragged, and he's jumping up and down. And there were 3 men fishing off the back of the boat. And he said they just waved at him and kept going. Oh my God.
And then 13 and a half months into his journey, Alvarenga started to notice that things were changing.
The bird life has changed. The fish swimming underneath him, it smells organic. He starts to smell like, you know, the smell of dirt. And then he sees a piece of land and he's headed right towards it. He washes ashore on a deserted island, which is the last thing he could have possibly hit. If he missed that, it was like another 2,000 miles to Japan. I mean, he was gone and no way he was going to make it.
The ocean finally decided it was tired of carrying Alvarenga and threw him up on one of the southernmost Marshall Islands, a speck in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Go ahead, Google map the Marshall Islands. See how many times you have to zoom in to see if there's even anything there.
He's got his knife, and he just crawls up on the shore, and he just grabbed a handful of sand, and he couldn't really walk because his legs were so weak. So he pulls himself up on the beach, and he falls asleep. And then he hears something that changes his life forever. He hears a rooster. And when he hears the rooster, he knows humans are near. He starts kind of crawling across this little island, which is tiny. It's probably not taller than a couple of tennis courts. And he sees a shack, and a couple from the Marshall Islands come out, and they're the only 2 inhabitants of this other island, which is right next door. And they see this animal climbing down the beach. They don't even think it's human. And then the wife says, "Well, wait," she said. "Look, it's a person." And Alvarenga gets down on his hands and knees and puts his hands together like praying for help. So they carry him over to their house, and they start cooking, and he eats and eats. They're making a pancake.
After he spends a few days recovering, they reach out to the local U.S. ambassador, who gets in touch with Mexico.
Then the Mexicans say, "Yes, we lost a boat with that name, you know, 1.5 years ago. Yes, we... that's, you know, because you can read like the serial number of the name on the boat." And so that's how there's first indications that, you know, oh my God, this could actually be true.
Wow, that's incredible. And what was his homecoming like? I mean, did he in fact go back and raise his daughter?
His initial homecoming was terrible because the press swarms him because it's a remarkable story and he wants nothing to do with the press. He doesn't want to talk to anybody, wants to forget this thing. He's like, he hasn't seen humans in months. He's terrified. But when he actually makes it home and the press kind of dies off, the daughter was totally shocked because she had always been told that the sharks had eaten daddy. So that daddy had come back was a big deal.